My name is Tyler Fornes, and I am one of the co-hosts of the Good, the Bad, and the Hungy AEW podcast here on the Voice of Wrestling Podcasting Network. We take a broad scope approach to the world of All Elite Wrestling and the entire universe of Tony Khan. We talk about the big matches, the big stars, the promos, the storylines, and we also look at it from a big picture perspective. How are things going to change over the course of the next 10 years with AEW still in the picture? How are companies like WWE going to adapt and adjust to AEW? Are they going to be a similar way like they did with WCW in the late 1990s? Will there be a counterpunch? We talk about all of that and more on The Good, The Bad, and The Hungy every week on the Voices of Wrestling Network.
Do you like wrestling trivia? Then check out the 5-Star Match Game, the Pro Wrestling Quiz Show. I'm Joe Gagne, and every episode, I grill 3 contestants with 5 rounds of power-packed wrestling trivia. We have over 30 evergreen episodes in the archives covering WWE, AEW, Japan, Mexico, and much, 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 much more. Play along at home and check it out today.
This podcast is a member of the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network. Visit voicesofwrestling.com to hear the rest of our great podcasts, as well as show reviews, columns, opinions, and updates across the world of wrestling.
Welcome back to another episode of The Good, The Bad, and The Hungy here on the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network. I'm your host, Tyler Fornes. With me, as always, is Fred Moreland, who is proving every day that he is an old man. How are you?
Yeah, tell you. Look, buddy, when you can throw your back out by sitting in the cold for 2 hours, handing out candy for a trick-or-treat, you know, you got to do it. You just have to do it.
Fun fact, the wife just bought a sauna. Been saving up for it, and we just got it put up yesterday. It's one of those red light gimmicks. Thing freaking rules, man. It gets to like 150 degrees and you're really sweating in there. It's awesome. You should get one of those.
I've got a $15 heating pad on my back, so, you know. Can't all live in the lap luxury of Minnesota.
Hey,
I assume that if I spend half an hour outside of Minnesota in late October, I'll just like petrify.
I mean, today it's like 46, so it's not too bad.
I'm busted. It sucks. You know what else sucks is look at this flawless transition. Unnecessary mid-card championships, Tyler. And boy, could you believe that AEW is? They came up with this new concept of a championship. They're going to call it the National Championship, but the gimmick is the champion is going to defend the belt in other promotions and around the world.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. The first of its kind ever in AEW or anywhere in the world. To come up with this idea, and I for one applaud Tony Khan for the creativity needed to come up with such a concept.
I have a theory about this that I've been kind of putting together. Obviously, the International Championship was kind of meant to be that. One of the reasons why it wasn't that was, and correct me if I'm wrong, but it feels like that was a pandemic-related decision. I can't remember when the International Championship debuted, but I think it was pre-pandemic, right?
Yes. It was, well, no, I think it launched shortly after the pandemic. But I'm checking, so I'm curious.
I genuinely don't
remember. Yeah, it launched as the All-Atlantic Championship with, like...
Oh, it was the Forbidden Door gimmick, wasn't it?
Yeah, in 2022. But it had, like, I forget if it was Japan or what on it, but it was like, that's not in the Atlantic, but okay. What a title. What a title.
So here's my theory. And it's all going to be on execution, right? Because so many of the issues that we have with All Elite Wrestling isn't necessarily the ideas, other than the Brochachos. That was just dog shit. But it's about the execution of the idea of what they want to do. And the All Atlantic into the International Championship was meant to kind of go around, defend it everywhere. That didn't happen. It just evolved into a standard mid-card title. And then they wrapped it up into the TNT. It was the Continental. Never mind. So here's my theory. This is AEW's counter to the WWE ID program. Now, I have really? No.
Oh, okay.
This is my
Why
theory.
Do you need to counter that?
This is my theory.
Okay, go ahead. I'm sorry.
The WWE ID program has been bad. It's been terribly run. They're just dropping all kinds of talent from their ID contracts, which, look, anybody should sign a WWE ID contract. It's $40,000 and you get to take indie bookings. That sounds pretty great. But a lot of companies didn't want to deal with it, so they didn't even book some of these ID talents. My thinking is this. They have quasi-working relationships with West Coast Pro, with Prestige, because you have Chris Hero, who books West Coast Pro, essentially in the building. You have Swerve Strickland, Nick Wayne, and Darby Allin, who still go work Prestige and have strong ties to the region. My thinking is that they're going to intentionally try to bring this title to the indies and use it as like tryout matches and try and get some exposure for some of these guys, and then also try to bring them in. Now, with the WWE ID thing, it's a simple idea that makes a lot of sense, but their execution was dog shit. And AEW doesn't really have a developmental school. They don't have, well, technically the Nightmare Factory, but even that is kind of murky because of Cody Rhodes' involvement, and he's no longer with the company. So that in itself is kind of not gone away, but it's been minimized. This, to me, is their idea of trying to almost manipulate the indies to their advantage. Will they actually do it? I have no freaking clue. I have no idea really what they're going to do with this title other than lip service. But that's kind of my theory of how they might approach it. Will it happen? We'll find out. But if they're serious about going to other areas, and if they're serious about actually making this a real title where they defend it everywhere, my theory makes a lot of sense.
Yeah, I guess we'll see. I mean, I'm just not... AEW very much suffers from new toy syndrome. I think that's a major issue with the company is... Tony will get a new toy, and then he'll kind of eventually forget about old toys. And I think we've seen that with the Trios Championship, which could have been a very unique thing. I feel like it's a fair thing to say. And instead, it just kind of is extra tag team championships, just like kind of used the exact same way. And I mean, we already had this... this concept of the traveling championship that AEW talent will take around the world, and they kind of gave up on it pretty quickly. Let's take a look here at something. And, I just see this going for 6 months. And this is a company that's already combining titles, you know. And it just feels really unnecessary in a year where I think you've already introduced 3 new championships to introduce a fourth. Like, it just feels like too many belts. Going back to the initial run of the title is outside of, in 2022, there was... three title defenses of it outside of AEW, and that was in a 2-week period, so two Rev Pro shows and an OTT. In 2023, there was one. Yeah, there was one, and it was a New Japan in the U.S. show. In 2024, I'd be shocked. Although there was more. There was one, two, three, four, five. There are actually five in 2024. Shockingly, a couple of New Japan's, a couple Maple Leaf Pro and a Rev Pro and a CMLL and another Rev Pro. But like, it's not really. I don't really think it came across as like a big deal, you know. Mm-hmm. And I just think that this is unnecessary. You're already a company that's kind of struggling to like get people over, and I don't think that this is going to help them get over, which kind of feels the opposite of what a new belt should be doing. I think it's just going to kind of, you've already got too much going on with like the mid card, and maybe it'll be a great way to get someone over. You know, that's obviously what you would have to hope for. But yeah, I think just I'm not optimistic, and I'll leave it at that. I don't feel great about it working out.
Look, I'm going to be real with you. Neither do I. I think it's a dumb idea to bring in another mid-card belt. I saw somebody make the point, I think it might have been Meltzer, that AEW is at their most popular when they just had four titles. TNT,
yeah, I wouldn't say
world title and women's title.
Yeah, I wouldn't say that's like why they were at their most popular, but yes, it's definitely a point of strength when they it's a little bit easier to, or a little simpler.
I think if you, I don't mind having a decent amount of titles, but I do think that there's a little bit of a glut outside of the top of the card with titles. I like feuds that don't have titles. Like, those are good. They're healthy in a wrestling promotion. I think the Continental title being what it is, like, I think how they've done it is fine, but I also don't think it's one of those deals where they've booked it as well as they could have. Like, the idea of the Continental title being decided in the Continental Classic is good. And then defending it every so often with Continental rules, I think they could do a little more to lean into that and really try to drive home that the Continental title is different. I don't think you need a second mid-card title after the TNT. I think the TNT is being used perfectly right now with Kyle Fletcher. This is his method of elevation, and that's kind of how they're going about it. I think the trios titles are an objectively good idea that has been very poorly done. Tag titles are good. The women's division, I think you could get rid of the TBS title right now, retire it for the time being, maybe do a double champion gimmick for a couple of years where, like they did in WWE, where they had both title belts and then split them back up when you have a little bit of a deeper roster in terms of being able to tell a lot of different stories at the same time. I don't know if this women's division with all the injuries and Mercedes kind of doing her own thing with this insane belt collector gimmick, I don't know if it's a good idea to have two big titles, but I do like the idea of eventually, whenever they actually release them, the women's tag team titles. One main title, set of tag team titles, and I think you have enough stories for that, especially because with tag teams, you can still have your top of the card wrestlers who are involved in major storylines in tag team matches and involved in that. So if I were to look at this promotion, it would be both world titles, both sets of tag titles, the Continental and the TNT, and that's it. I would have six titles. I would trim the trios title. I would not have national title, and I would retire for the time being the TBS. Not saying the TBS is bad, but I think tag team titles in the women's division is more important than a secondary, secondary singles title. Like, you don't need to have all these titles. It's a crutch to a point to just book around a title. Book because you have a good story. Book because you don't always have to fight for a title. A lot of wrestling feuds over the course of time haven't even involved a title, like the best ones. You don't need it. And I feel like Tony Khan had these great ideas initially, and now he's just falling into booking traps and booking like crutches, like titles and splitting up tag teams like that we make fun of relentlessly. Like, I just think he's not creatively bankrupt, but he needs somebody to keep him creatively on track. And I think that's one of the biggest issues right now in AEW, because the top stuff still hits great, but the bottom stuff isn't. And if it's not hitting throughout the card, I think that was one of the big draws for AEW like shows and AEW as a whole, was you could sink your teeth into a lot of stuff. Right now you can't. And the top isn't good enough, because we've talked about it privately. One of the big things in pro wrestling right now is there aren't stars. Like, pass the mom test, star. Capital S, star. Okada's not a star in this country. Omega's not a star. Hangman Page is not a star. Where are the stars? That, even if you go over to WWE, Roman Reigns isn't a capital S star in the same way that we're accustomed to. John Cena is a capital S star. The Rock is a capital S star. Cody Rhodes is emerging as a capital S star because he does so much media and he's doing crossover kind of stuff. But that, I think that's the biggest problem in wrestling right now. And forcing yourself to have all these titles, I think, is a symptom of that.
Yeah, we'll see how it's implemented, but like, it just feels really unnecessary. Now, there is a situation unfolding with this that Tony Khan is claiming the heritage, or the lineage, I should say, of the national championship from Georgia Championship Wrestling back in the early 80s, which, of course, was on TBS. And, you know, trying to appeal to that positive history. But that's proved unpopular with NWA, who have their own national championship. And, you know, that goes back to that. That same title. And so they're kind of pissed about it. And I can't blame them. I do think it's kind of weird to be like, this is our lineage, and you know, have another company be like, dude, we own that belt, but what are we doing? And then there's still the ongoing Shockwave trademark thing, I guess, which, I mean, it seems to not be an issue, because Shockwave is apparently never going to be a TV show. You know, that's just feel like we've been, 18 months now of like, the initial announcement of Shockwave is, well, not announcement, but the initial rumors coming out. And then absolutely nothing coming from them. I can't sit here and say that, like, the main reason for creating this title would be to mess with the NWA, because it feels like such a waste of energy to like try to mess with the NWA. Like, who cares? But I can't rule it out, I guess.
Yeah, this whole NWA AEW thing has been going on for a while. And look, do they have a claim? Like, are we talking like this is a copyright infringement claim, or they're just pissed because it's an unwritten rule of wrestling that you don't have the same name of a title?
Oh, it's a dispute over, they're opposing a trademark application. So not copyright, but a trademark. Okay.
So it's it is a legit trademark application.
Okay. Yeah, that is my understanding. Now, like I said, this story has been kind of dead for a year, seemingly, because...
No, I'm not talking Shockwave, I'm talking the national
title. Yeah. Oh, well, the national title, I don't think is a... No, I was talking about the trademark for Shockwave. As far as the national title, I don't know if it's actually copyrighted. Now, they could definitely make an argument that that's their intellectual property, NWA could, since they've been using it for a while. But... You know, I also don't think... I think what would possibly cause an issue is the claiming the heritage, the lineage. Another company has a belt from that, but it's very silly. It just feels, all this just seems very silly. We're going to do a quick injury roundup here. Dustin Rhodes, recovering from his double knee replacement, is said on Twitter, he hopes to be back by March. Brian Cage is going to have another surgery to follow up on his previous surgery, so he's just going to be out even longer. And Big Tom Ish, Tomohiro Ishii dislocated his shoulder on the October 22nd episode of Collision facing Pac. One thing that I saw, though, just was kind of interesting is AEW apparently moved all their stuff up to Nashville as they continue to just try to become the perfect bridge between TNA and WCW, I guess, spiritually. So they moved all their stuff up there, including their practice ring. And apparently there's a bunch of, well, this is for Brian Alvarez, there are people that are injured that previously would be using that practice ring as part of their, like, prepping for return stuff. But now there's no practice ring. So I haven't really seen, like, a follow-up on this. This was something from, like, 9 days ago or something, but I thought it was just kind of a interesting story. Ideally, I think you would have a practice ring where people can use it, but maybe I'm just built different.
You are built different. Right. Look at your back.
That's right. I'm built poorly. All right. So one more story we want to talk about. Then we're going to talk about the Observer Hall of Fame. So Hiroshi Tanahashi's retirement match is scheduled for the Tokyo Dome for New Japan January 4th. Of course, New Japan is a promotional partner of AEW. Now, the story is... there's been rumors for a while now that Shinsuke Nakamura is intended to be the opponent of Hiroshi Tanahashi. I don't think that I'm really breaking news there. This has been a thing that has been talked about for a while. But nothing's been announced. And this week, Hiroshi Tanahashi had a press conference scheduled. And it wasn't announced why, but you know. With no opponent announced for him on January 4th, you have to assume that it was reasonable to assume that it would have been to announce his opponent for that match. But instead, he just had nothing to announce. I read that a reporter was like, "So is there like a delay or something?" And Tanahashi was like, "Yeah, we're working on it, basically." So I listened to the Super J Cast, of course, also a member of the Voices of Wrestling podcasting network earlier this week, and they basically talked about how it was at one point that Shinsuke Nakamura was not only scheduled to be Tanahashi's opponent, but that Nakamura was scheduled to be at that press conference earlier this week. And then it was canceled. His appearance was canceled. And they reported that they've been told that WWE is not blocking Nakamura working this match. That apparently he has their blessing to do it. I think I read in Meltzer's reporting that Nakamura's contract allows him to work in Japan with the permission of WWE. And... So, you know, it is not a WWE issue that is preventing Nakamura from being announced as Tanahashi's opponent, and that is who I think Tanahashi wants to face. Again, this is summary from what I heard on the Super J-Cast. If I mess anything up, I apologize. I am a notorious idiot. But they also said that Kazuchika Okada was never the original plan for Tanahashi's opponent. And they hinted that someone's trying to block the Nakamura match, and it's not WWE. And then they talked about being a New Japan being in a proxy war between you know, the two big American wrestling companies, AEW and WWE. So, you know, it's not exactly, and that this concludes what Super J-Cast outright said on their show, I believe. So, going forward, this is me connecting the dots, la 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 la. So it sure sounds like that this is Tony Khan blocking the usage of Nakamura because, you know, the fraught is a word I would use, relationship between AEW and WWE. And I will say that I can see why Tony Khan would not want New Japan to work with WWE. That makes sense to me in a way, because, you know, you WWE's trying to put you out of business and they're, you know, willing to do all kinds of bullshit to do that. And that sucks. I am sympathetic to this part of it. To the, like, hey, we have a working relationship, New Japan. You know, you know that these guys hate me and I hate them and they're making my life difficult. It's not very cash money of you to, you know, try to work with them. But I think, you know, you could say that Tony Khan's been put in kind of a bad position here because of all that stuff. I don't think it's that bad of a position. I think that Tony Khan is, if I'm putting the dots together accurately, and if Tony Khan is taking steps to try to prevent Nakamura from facing Tanahashi and replacing him with Kazuchika Okada or someone else, but I assume Okada. Okada's the one that makes sense. And they did mention Okada on the Super J-Cast, so the portion of it I listened to. I can see why you'd want to do that. At the same time, I think trying to block this match from happening is going to do far more damage to AEW / Tony Khan's reputation than allowing it to happen. I think that if you let, you know, this match take place, if you let Nakamura face Tanahashi, it does a little PR boost, I reckon, for WWE, because he can be like, oh, well, they're cool, and they let their guy work in New Japan to face the great Hiroshi Tanahashi in his retirement match. And Tanahashi hasn't faced Nakamura in years and years. You know, it would have to be before Nakamura went to WWE. While Okada and Tanahashi had a bunch of matches after that. And, you know, Okada just left New Japan like a year ago, or a little, like a year and a half ago, or whatever it was. And how can I miss you if you don't go away? Right? You know, how can the New Japan fans, like, really miss Okada if he's barely gone? On top of that, I do believe there is some hard feelings among the New Japan fandom. Now, I don't have a good feeling for how much of this is the English-speaking world versus the native fans of Japan. I can't speak to that. I don't know. I don't know if this is just English speakers saying stuff online and actually everyone in Japan is fine with it. I don't know. I'm not smart enough to do that. But it sure does appear that there's a lot of New Japan fans that are already unhappy with AEW because they have Okada and they have Ospreay and they have Jay White. And, you know, that's three top stars from New Japan that jumped to AEW. And I can tell you, like, why that is, that should have been expected, and that's actually fine in the way how pro wrestling works. But, you know, Tyler, if the Vikings were to lose in one fell swoop, back in the day, Adrian Peterson, Kevin Williams, and Pat Williams, all in one go to the same team. It's a different thing, but still, you would not be like, oh, man, well, that's cool. You know, you got to go to free agency sometimes. You would be like, this is fucking bullshit. This sucks, man. if they jump to like the Packers or whoever, or the, you know, insert whatever team here.
Think of it this way. It would be like going from like the Lakers and then all of a sudden trying to create a super team in the G League, where there really is no good comparison in modern sports because we really don't have companies competing against each other.
Right. It's like a different thing, but like that's the best comparison I can throw together. Like, is like you three quarter stones of this thing you love are going to this company. And on top of that, you know, which I didn't really touch on with my dumb sports analogy, but on top of that, the company that they're jumping to is supposed to be your ally. Now, I think that the fact of the matter is that with the financial stuff going on in Japan and also just like the reality of, you know, how the world of wrestling works now financially, that those guys were going to go somewhere else. And each of them, if they didn't go to AEW, they were going to go to WWE. And I feel like that's a damn guarantee. And I will add that I just don't think that it's reasonable to be mad at AEW, you know, considering. But, like, again, they did sign them. And I'm not going to sit here and tell you to be like, actually, it's okay that our top stars left. But I think it's going to cause Tony Khan more damage if it comes out that this is the great Hiroshi Tanahashi's retirement match. Arguably the second most important person in the history of New Japan Pro Wrestling outside of Antonio Inoki. And you, while being a promotional partner with Tanahashi and the company that he's president of and all of this, you try to block his chosen opponent for retirement match because of reasons outside of the control of New Japan and Tanahashi. I can tell you that that's a justified feeling for Khan to have and a justified position to want to take, but I can also tell you that that will not carry water. And I think he's going to come off looking far worse as the guy that blocked Tanahashi's desired retirement match versus, you know, whatever, like, cred WWE will get for allowing Nakamura Tanahashi to happen. And on top of that, I think if you value the New Japan relationship, I'll leave a pause here for New Japan fans to add their commentary. Okay. If Tony Khan values the New Japan relationship, he needs to be kind to his partner, in my opinion. And I think the kind thing, and I think what would be the smartest thing long-term for Tony Khan and AEW would be to not mess this up for Tanahashi and Nakamura. I think that you have to respect Tanahashi, and I think you should respect New Japan, and I think you should definitely let this match happen. I think that's just a better way to do business, in my opinion.
I don't disagree with you.
We'll see how it goes. It's, you know, there's still plenty of time, but I mean, at some point they do have to actually put a name out there, right? Mm-hmm. You gotta fucking announce the match. But, like, I don't know. I think you can be as bad as you want at WWE, and I think that Tony Khan probably has a lot of reasons, most of them legit, to be mad at WWE because of the way that WWE is so anti-competition and takes all these steps and et cetera, et cetera. But I think this is one situation where you got to be the bigger man, and it sucks sometimes when you're dealing with someone who is a pissant all the time referring to WWE. You have to be the bigger person. But I think the Tony Khan should do it, you know, assuming that this is that what I have lined up in my head, what I have laid out as what I believe to be the situation is accurate. And my assessment of the information that is out there is accurate. Now, if I'm wrong, if I mess something up, I'm sorry, I'm just a stupid idiot that's doing his best. But that certainly seems to be what the what the signs are pointing towards. And I feel, I mean, I heard it just a touch of the flagship where they talked about this. And I listened to the Super J-Cast segment, and I feel like it's fair for me to talk about these things this way. I don't feel like I'm speaking out of turn. I don't feel like I'm just saying crazy stuff. And I'm obviously not like some, you know, anti-AEW guy, because it's... that's the company we started the podcast because of that company. You know, we follow AEW every week. I still have watched over 98% of the matches they've ever held, I think, unless you count Dark, and it goes down a little bit because, you know, I only need so many 3-minute squashes in my life. And it's just really a crappy situation. But sometimes you're in a crappy situation and you got to be the bigger team. That's it. That's all I got to say on it. I've gone on long enough already about the Tanahashi Nakamura rumor mill, but there it is.
It's such a layered conversation too, right? Because we're not talking about these negotiations and discussions happening without Tanahashi being the focal point. And yeah, we're not just talking about the fact that it's Tanahashi's last match. Tanahashi is the damn president of the company. So he is involved in all of these discussions, even if it wasn't about him. If this was like Liger's final match and they were trying to get somebody from WWE, let's just kind of go that path, he'd be in all those discussions too. So it makes it a little bit more of a delicate situation. If what we're kind of hearing, as you alluded to, is true, it's kind of a catch 22 for Tony Khan, right? Because, and this is something I've dealt with in my personal life, why is the impetus on Tony Khan to be the bigger man? Why is, this is a devil's advocate play, why does he have to be the bigger man when they're intentionally screwing with his company and screwing with his, like, his means to make money and grow his own business? Why does he have to be the bigger man? The opposite point is, it's fucking Hiroshi Tanahashi. Just do it. Who cares? It's a very tough one, because you can easily argue both sides, and both sides can easily be right, even in the same discussion, where it is not on Khan to be the bigger person all the time. He shouldn't have to be the bigger person, but it's always presented that way. But at the end of the day, it is Tanahashi, and he is a once-in-a-generation type star. In Japan, Tanahashi is a star, capital S. We talked about that earlier. They've already eclipsed last year's dome sales, and they don't even have a match announced for Tanahashi. They may put 45,000 in the dome. That is not out of the question here. It's a tough one. I feel bad that Tony Khan has to kind of deal with this. Then again, he's also putting himself in the situation where he could easily come out looking like the bad guy if it turns out that he is at fault for why this is taking too long. If he is the one blocking Nakamura from appearing, the whole thing just sucks. It just sucks bad. And the real fault of this whole situation isn't Tony Khan. It's Tony Khan by proxy of WWE trying to be a playground bully and counterbooking and disrespecting and weaponizing Twitter to attack AEW at every single turn. That's the root cause of this whole thing. But the actions of Khan is what's going to be blamed. So when you look at it from that perspective, if you're AEW, you don't want to look weak by just allowing a WWE wrestler onto your partner's programming because of everything that could mean. But if you don't, you're going to look like the biggest asshole in the world. So what do you do? I would just, it's Nakamura. We're not talking about John Cena going over there. I think if this was John Cena, it would be a completely different discussion point, right? Because Cena's never worked New Japan. He's only been a WWE guy. He's got a blind loyalty to Vince McMahon. That is a different situation. Nakamura was one of, like, that generation's like group of three. I'm not calling him the Three Musketeers, but he was in that generation with Tanahashi and Shibata. It's a different kind of conversation. And I know I've made probably like 12 different points in the last 3 or 4 minutes, but it's a complicated question and problem for Tony Khan to answer. And no matter what he does not win. He cannot win here. And
no, this is a 100% a war game situation, not the match, the movie. You know, the only winning play is to not play. Unfortunately, I don't think that's an option. So he's got to make a decision. And
I think the only decision here, which, look, I think it sucks for Tony Khan. You just got to let Nakamura do the match and not complain about it. And I think you just need to bite the bullet. But the one thing that I would want Tony Khan to try and do is, okay, you're going to have Nakamura work on our partner's show. I would like to have AJ Styles for one match with Will Ospreay. And I think that's a request you make and see if they say yes. I also think that maybe that's just me really wanting a Will Ospreay AJ Styles match. While Will Ospreay's at, like, once he comes back, he's still at his peak. And AJ is about 80% of what he was. He can still work that kind of match. You just have to kind of work it. AJ just needs to be a little bit more ground-based with his offense, which is fine. I think you can still get a great match out of those two, and it's something that I know a lot of people would absolutely love to see. I think if you're Tony Khan, you try and get something like that out of the deal. But no matter what, you let it happen. And you just have to bite the bullet if this sucks and you're just going to get screwed in some way, shape, or form. Because at the end of the day, it's Tanahashi. You work with him. You have a lot of respect for him. And you just do the right thing for Tanahashi and deal with the consequences outside of that. I don't know. I feel bad for Khan in this situation because he can't win. No matter what, he's going to be painted as the bad guy.
I mean, if there is a way you can play this where you can just have them do the match, but, like, you know, you could ask them to put you over on commentary a little bit to, like, talk about how you allowed, you know, and say something about how we helped make the match happen or something, just, you know, lie or whatever. Something along those lines. But on the other hand, you've already kind of got yourself in a bad situation with New Japan's English commentary.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, the story that he got Chris Charlton suspended for a couple weeks because Charlton tried to work his own angle of, you know, basically doing the AEW's a bad company that stole our dudes storyline as part of the Gabe Kidd Omega match at last year's Tokyo Dome. And I'm not saying that Chris Charlton wouldn't be a professional about it, but I can't imagine that he'd be tap dancing if you went to him or like, okay, can you say nice things about Tony Khan for this match happening, you know?
Yeah. It's what really needs to happen here is Tony Khan needs to hire a legitimate PR firm to run his company.
Well, not run his company, but to be part of
run all the PR of his company.
Yeah.
Because that can help him a lot in situations like this. It just sucks.
I think I agree with you that they need to have a better PR presentation in several ways, but I think this might have still been like just a damned if you do, damned if you don't situation.
No matter what, Khan is screwed here, and he has not helped himself. This whole thing sucks. It should be all about Hiroshi Tanahashi going off and having one last match for the fans.
I think it turned into just stupid drama.
Because you know what? When Subconscious hits in the Tokyo Dome, I'm going to go bonkers, and I really hope he has it. He has the dancers like he did at what, Wrestle Kingdom 8, I think it was. You remember that?
I actually don't.
Oh, you gotta go find that. It's one of the best entrances I think I've ever seen, because they got like the fire and the pyro, and then they've also got like, they're not strippers, but they're like professional dancers, and holy crap, are they good! And one dancer like starts like ends up on top of Shinsuke Nakamura and like stretched out. It's really fucking cool. Like, he just looks like king of the damn world. Like, I don't know. I'm talking too much about an entrance from Wrestle Kingdom 8, but
that's the news for this. That's the news for this week. We're going to touch on the Observer Hall of Fame real quick. So we'll talk about who we voted for. Of course, the last show on here was me doing a Hall of Fame podcast with Adam Berger. And ballots were due today. Both Tyler and I had our voters and got our votes in. And Tyler, let's talk about it.
Absolutely. Where do you want to start?
Let's start with modern U.S. and Canada.
Modern U.S. and Canada. The six possible selections on the ballot. I used all six. I voted for Mark and Jay Briscoe, Samoa Joe, John Moxley, CM Punk, Cody Rhodes, and Sabu. I did really consider Goldberg, but I think that's going to be a next year decision because I didn't have a seventh slot. I've really come around on Goldberg. Not only was he arguably the biggest draw in the biggest era of professional wrestling in this country, which the Attitude Era was such a tremendous draw on a national stage. He was arguably the single biggest draw in that whole era. And then he came back and was a pretty big draw in that early second WWE run, like 2015, 2016, 2017, those matches with like Brock Lesnar squashing Bray Wyatt, Kevin Owens. He was a big draw. And he has an aura about him. He's not a great worker, but what he does incredibly well. So I've been convinced on Goldberg, but I just didn't have the spots. I went with Samoa Joe instead, who has been, he drew the biggest house in TNA history. The biggest pay-per-view gate in their that company's history, which is only so impressive, but considering what trajectory they were on, that was a match people salivated for. They didn't want to see Kurt Angle. They want to see him take on Samoa Joe. He was, in my opinion, the big draw of that match. And then wherever he's gone, he's been a great worker, and he's worked at the top of the card in every company. And he's now about to main event his second pay-per-view in AEW in a row. Like, the dude is in his 40s. His body just can't keep up, but everything else is still there. And he continues to put a stronger case on the table for him to be in this Hall of Fame. I think it's enough right now. He's one of the more believable promos I've ever heard. You look at him and you think he's going to kill you. I just think this guy's, I think he should be more of a shoo-in than he's being talked about. But I think that's one of the reasons why this Hall of Fame is so cool, is because there's so many different interpretations of what the qualifications are. But I'm a big, big Samoa Joe supporter, and I really hope he gets in, or at the very least, he gets more support next year when the likelihood of Punk, Cody Rhodes, and hopefully Sabu and the Briscoes all go in.
Let's see. I voted for CM Punk. I voted for Sabu. I voted for Cody Rhodes. I think those three will hopefully get in this year. Sabu's the, I don't know, man. It's gonna be tough. I can see no one giving in. I could see like three people giving in. And then I voted for the Briscoes, who I mean have been a absolutely high level tag team for 20 years. Just absolutely an astonishing run there. John Moxley, I voted for. I mean, he's a 2-time Wrestler of the Year. I feel like he's put together a Hall of Fame career with everything from the time with Shield to blips in WWE. I mean, granted, their usage of him at times is very dumb, but also he was always very over them with them. I would point to the very silly way that they couldn't decide what to do with him, but they extended his farewell tour forever during his run with them. Mm-hmm. Which was very funny. But I mean, I think he's a great draw, and I think he's a great worker. He's been such a such a stabilizing force for AEW his entire time with them. Whenever they've been in trouble, they've gone to him as champion. And it's worked out every time. I think the only real hiccup was like the very start of the Death Riders, where it didn't quite work out just right. But I mean, he's just so damn good, and he's been so important to AEW. And these past 6 years, I mean, basically, he was like their first major signee after they started having shows. And I think it's just obvious that he's great like that. I would also say that Mercedes Moné, I voted for her as my last pick. It came down to her, Becky Lynch, and Goldberg. None of them have like a perfect case, but I was just thinking that like Mercedes is the best in-ring North American woman wrestler, I guess, ever, frankly. I mean, if you want to go back and like make an argument for Mildred Burke and Jean Byers, you could, I guess. But like, that's such a different era. I just feel like that she's already accomplished something that's Hall of Fame level. And yes, it's still pretty early in her career, but I can't, you know, I can't say that she's not not a Hall of Famer. So I thought it was a reasonable pick, and that's where I cut it off. I also like Goldberg as a candidate. I think what really helped him, what I think pushes him over to a Hall of Famer, is the success he had as a draw in his later appearances in WWE. I think those were all very good and very successful. And I also think Becky Lynch still deserves it for like historical significance because of her being, you know, a draw for a period in WWE, like their top draw, arguably top star in the world as a woman. But one thing that is hurting her case is that she has done relatively so little since then. And yes, there's been like pregnancies and injuries in there and stuff, but it's still like very limited time, and then when she does come back, it feels like WWE just wants to misuse her in one way or another, and it's hurting her case. But I still think that she has accomplished enough. So there's my votes in modern. You want? Did you vote in historical?
I want to say this about Becky Lynch too. Sure. Did not consider her at all. I understand the argument of, oh, she was the biggest draw in WWE and it being very historically significant for a woman. I don't disagree with that at all. My big thing is twofold. One, they felt the need to force Charlotte into that match. And two, she absolutely died the second she won that belt. It was done. And to me, that is a disqualifier. I can't get over that. I can't get over the fact that even though she was at this super high peak, that nobody gave a crap the second she won the belt. And maybe that's something I'll get over in time, but it's still so fresh in my mind, being that it wasn't that long ago, that I didn't even think of considering her for this. And I understand anybody who does, but it's a really tough deal to be that big of a deal and that big of a draw and then all of a sudden be nothing. That resonates with me. So she's a tough one. I'm not quite there with Mercedes. I don't blame anybody else who is. I want to see how this run really plays out, where she's doing this belt collector gimmick, and if this thing just tanks at the end, then that's going to be a real detriment on her case. So she's one of the few where I just want to wait and see.
I mean, like, what would tanking look like in your mind? I'm just curious.
I don't know. But okay. It's just something with a current candidate. I want to see how this one plays out. With Moxley, I think the way this Death Riders thing has played out has been a huge positive for him, even if it started on a little bit of a rough
path. I agree with that for sure.
So I just view it a little bit differently.
Well, I voted for him. I mean, I Moxley, so.
Yeah. It's, look, a lot of good candidates in here. I still think Bill Dundee being a candidate is weird and modern, but.
Yeah, I hope that he moves to historical next year. I feel like it's really hard to assess him within the modern pool.
You did ask if I voted in historical. I did. I voted for six. I did vote for the British Bulldogs. I voted for June Byers. Shout out, Fred. That's your fault. Wild Bull Curry, Junkyard Dog, Mad Dog and Butcher Vachon, and the Von Erichs, Gary, Kevin, and David.
I had a pretty similar ballot. I voted for June Byers, of course. I mean, she's basically, she's the only successful follow-up to Mildred Burke that we have. And I feel like that she accomplished enough in her career, again, in like very difficult situations, to make her a Hall of Famer. So I think that's the correct call there. Before the Fabulous Moolah and, other things ruined women's wrestling in the U.S. I think that, I think she's a Hall of Famer. Wild Bill Curry, very early draw, really helped kind of popularize the start of like hardcore wrestling. I voted for Junkyard Dog, tremendous draw for a while in the Southeast as a black man, which is, at that point, was a very hard thing to do. People will rag on the second half of his career. I get it, but he was just so monumentally over for a few years there that, like, I feel like he deserves inclusion, especially when you consider the societal factors going on there. I voted for the Von Erichs. I mean, similar to Junkyard Dog without the societal stuff. I mean, they were just so over for such a... I mean, they were supernovas. I voted for Cowboy Bob Ellis. Very strong drawing argument with him. And I voted for Sputnik Monroe, who helped desegregate the wrestling crowds in Memphis and also was a decent draw and a decent wrestler. So, I mean, I think the more I hear about him, the more it's not just the desegregation thing, but that's always going to be like the elevator pitch on him. So, feel pretty good about those votes. Japan, did you vote in Japan?
Yes, I did. I voted for two. I voted for Hayabusa and Io Shirai / Io Sky. Shirai is one of the best women's workers I've ever seen, period. And to me, I think she's got a good case when it comes to drawing, maybe not so much historical significance, but for me, she's so good of a worker that's kind of put her over the top for me. Hayabusa, Hayabusa is one of the more influential wrestlers of all time. I feel if you're going to have Sabu on your ballot, I think you should have Hayabusa too. Even though they're almost the same, and it didn't like Hayabusa steal some of Sabu's gimmicks.
Yeah, he was very, very, very much inspired by Sabu, his style, and.
I also think that in turn that strengthens Sabu's case.
Yeah, I agree. I agree for sure.
Yeah, I considered Masaaki Mochizuki. That would be pretty much a strict work rate case. I haven't watched enough backlog of his stuff to really feel comfortable doing that. Zack Sabre Jr. to me has never been a meaningful draw at a big level, and I have never resonated with his work like others have. I think it's objectively very good, but I don't think he's the best to have ever worked his style. I don't think he's the best technical wrestler of all time. I think that's easily Bryan Danielson. I think if you put him in a ring with either Kurt Angle or Chris Benoit, I think that they could easily outshine him too. So, while I think he's incredibly good at what he does, the fact that he's never resonated with me, where like I watch a 4-star Zack Sabre Jr. match, and I'm just like, it's okay. Like it's just never been my thing. He's never been my cup of tea, but he's objectively great. And he's, when he finally got on top in New Japan, he was not a meaningful draw. He was fine. He was status quo. And I think that's holding me back as well, where anybody wants to be like, oh, that's the best technical wrestler to ever live. I can't really tell them that they're wrong because there's a real argument for it. And if you want to put him in as that alone, okay, I respect that. That's fine. I'm not there and I won't do it. So I didn't really consider anybody else. I thought about Tiger Jeet Singh, but I don't know. I have a hard time with candidates who are only like great draws because he wasn't really good in the ring at all. But his drawing case is incredibly impactful and incredibly positive. It's impressive. Yeah. So anybody who wants to vote for him on that, I'm not blaming him. But it's just hard for me.
Yeah, I haven't watched much footage of Tiger Jeet Singh, but like when every conversation about him is like, yeah, he was a draw. I mean, he was a great draw, but like he's also just god awful. It's really hard to get motivated, you know, to slap my hands together and pick up the ballot and be like, all right, baby, it's Tiger Jeet o'clock. You know, like that ain't. That's not exactly a foot of pep in my step, so I can't go for that. You know, that's not getting it done. I'll have to watch him and see if he's as, you know, do more research and decide if he's really as bad as everyone says. Because if he's just like, okay, then I think he's like a genuine, like, that. If he's passable, he'll be an easy vote. But he gets talked about like he is literally the worst main eventer at any level, at any point in time. And it's really hard to like vote for that, you know? Like, it's really, it's just, I can't do it. I can't make myself do it. So I voted for Zach, and I voted for Hayabusa. I need to watch more Yoshirai and Masaaki Mochizuki, assuming they stick on the ballot, to really get a good feel for them. Because their arguments are strongly, I'm not going to say completely, because you can always be like, they popped a house here or something, you know. But especially in Mochizuki's case, the majority of the argument is just in-ring. And I've obviously seen some of their work, but I haven't done, like, career retrospectives. So, and the same can be applied to Miko Satomura. Obviously, I think they're all very talented from what I have seen, but I just haven't, like, spent hours watching their stuff just to, like, you know, analyze them. Did you vote in Mexico this year?
No. I am not well-versed enough in Mexico at this point to vote. But I will say, if I did place a vote, I would want Dory Dixon and Gran Hamada to get in. And I would have strongly considered Masquerita Sagrada. But the whole ballot, I don't know enough about. And I didn't have the time to do enough research on it to really feel comfortable knowing that these guys should be Hall of Famers over everybody else. So I chose to stay out of it. But Gran Hamada and Darrell Dixon would have gotten my votes if I did.
I felt like I was familiar enough with the majority of candidates to vote in this one. I did some research, did some listening. And so I went with Dory Dixon, I went with Gran Hamada, and I went with Volador Jr. Dory Dixon was a tremendous draw and also the first black superstar in Mexican wrestling and Lucha Libre. Feel like that makes it pretty easy. He was also a top for like forever, if I recall correctly. Gran Hamada played a major role in like the foundation of Lucha Resu and also was a very good worker. So I thought that was a pretty easy pick. And Volador Jr., I just, you know, like, insert the Marge Simpson holding a potato meme here. I just think he's neat. I think he's a fantastic worker. And that's why I voted for him, because I just think he's, like, one of the best wrestlers I've ever seen. And I think he's a Hall of Fame level worker and has been, you know, looking over his career and everything. I feel like he's crossed that line, you know, for me. I'm also a former Kito Miyahara voter, so, you know. That's just where I, you know, that's kind of my take on that situation. I did not vote in Rest of the World. If you do not start out as a Rest of the World voter and you do enough research to feel like a good voter, God bless you, man. That's just so much digging, because that's I feel like that's easily the toughest category to become a competent voter in. And I don't want to be the asshole that goes in and be like, I have heard of Spiros Arian before. I will vote for him and ignore the rest. Like, I feel like that's such a BS way to handle business.
That's why I don't vote in Mexico, because I don't want to screw somebody over that should be a Hall of Famer, but I'm not ready for it.
Like, yeah.
I don't think that's fair. That's why I abstained from Mexico last year. I think I'll always abstain from Rest in the World, just because I don't think I'm ever going to have enough knowledge with how much time I can put into making sure that I vote in a great way to be able to place.
No, and that's the right way to handle your business with this. I think that if I will speak to a very specific group of people. If you are a voter, this is the right way to handle it. Is to know what you know and know what you don't know, and realize that if you start voting in categories that you aren't knowledgeable about, that you can really do damage to the Hall of Fame. And I feel like that's an important thing to keep in mind. I hopefully haven't done that myself. I always try to do my best. Dave moving up the voting deadline to my busiest time of year for my business. Not great, but what can you do? Sucks for me, but I just do the best I can. Did you vote in Rest of the World?
I said no.
Okay, I didn't think you, I thought you had, but I just wanted to be sure, just to make sure that you weren't like, well, Fred, I actually am the person that has started in this category. And no. Here is 45 minutes of in-depth information. Okay, so that leaves us with non-wrestlers. Now, just as a reminder, everybody in the non-wrestler category is assigned one of the previously mentioned geographic areas, so U.S., Canada, modern, historical, Japan, Mexico, and rest of the world, and so they count, you know, their denominator is based off of those categories, but you are limited to 7 votes of the non-wrestlers. I will go ahead and say who I voted for. Koichi Yoshizawa, who is a reporter in Japan that played a key role in transmitting information about Japanese pro wrestling to the United States. Tremendously important. It was very cool to learn about him this past year. I think he's a great candidate. I voted for Roy Welch, who, of course, is a historical promoter and tremendously important. Jesse Ventura. Everybody tries to be Jesse Ventura commentary. No one can do it as well. Like, when I have to listen to, like, Wade Barrett, you know, try to do the heel gimmick on commentary, it's such a pale imitation of how great Jesse Ventura was in his peak. And it's really, like, it's bad because people should stop trying to be Jesse Ventura because they can't be. But Jesse was so great at it. He really was. Ted Turner, I think he's an easy yes because he is why WCW existed, basically, and why we did not have a monopoly from like the late 80s on. And it gave us like a decade plus of another major promotion. It created a bunch of jobs. It created a company that actually surpassed WWF in the US for a while. I don't know how you can really look at him as a negative. I think he did tremendous things. Yes, he was very hands off, but like, I think that is just obvious. Morris Siegel, another very successful historical promoter. The Grand Wizard, one of the three wise men managers from the WWF region, was always a key player there and used to help get top heels over. And then Bobby Bruns, who helped train Ricky Dozan and also helped start Japanese professional wrestling on a large scale, so along with, you know, some promoting in the U.S. in booking, I should say. So those are my votes in that category. Tyler, yours?
Yeah, I voted for all seven potential slots. I voted for Bruns. I voted for Morris Siegel. I voted for George Scott. I voted for Roy Welch. And I voted for Ted Turner, who I voted for last year. If Ted Turner doesn't do what he did with wrestling, who the hell knows where pro wrestling would be in the United States at this point? Like, he did so much for professional wrestling just by making sure it had airtime, by supporting it. And one of the more influential, whether you think it was good or bad, eras of professional wrestling happened because of Ted Turner believing in WCW. Ted Turner's the reason the Attitude Era happened. Whether we want it, like, you want to give credit to other people or not, it all started because Ted Turner believed in WCW and gave it the airtime. I voted for Mike Tenay, who I think is, for my money, and I know it's not going to be a popular opinion, he's one of the better commentators I've ever heard. I have loved watching anything that Mike Tenay does. And maybe it's just my preferred style of commentary. I love the nerd shit. I love when you have people talking about the in-depth stuff. It's great. And his team with Don West is still my favorite commentary team to this day. I loved those guys. It was a perfect blend of chaos, passion, energy, and knowledge that I don't think we're ever going to see truly replicated in this space again. And then I'm going to be honest, I voted for Jesse Ventura, and I would not have voted for him last year, but I want to shout out the flagship Patreon guys, Joe Lanza and Rich Craich, when they had Tony Richards on.
That episode in particular. I mean, they did such, yeah, the flagship always does such a great job with the Hall of Fame audio, but that Tony Richards show in particular was awesome.
He convinced me to vote for Jesse Ventura, and, you know, I should have been more of a Jesse Ventura guy. But I wasn't. And you know why I should have been more of a Jesse Ventura guy? He won governorship in my state. He did. He was awesome as governor. He wasn't perfect, but he was like a professional wrestler. He just told it like it was. And it was just blatantly honest. And the one thing that he did, which was incredibly controversial at the time, which would be less controversial today, was he talked about legalizing prostitution. He's like, people do it anyways. Let's make it safe and get the tax money. Like, if he would have said that in today's day and age, he maybe have been viewed a little bit differently from a long-term perspective. But overall, what Ventura was able to do on the mic and using everything with wrestling to translate directly into politics, because he didn't win as a Democrat or Republican. He won as an independent. He beat Mark Dayton, who was a two-term governor later on. And I don't know if you know the department store Dayton's. Have you ever heard of Dayton's?
No, I have not.
It was a huge department store in the Midwest. Macy's ended up buying them in like 2000, something like that. And he's like a Dayton. So he won governorship, and he also beat out Norm Coleman, who was the Republican candidate, who also was a two-term governor later on. And he was a U.S. Senator as a Republican. That was a big deal that he won that election. So I should have been more understanding, I guess, of that. But I thought Tony Richards' argument for him was so good and compelling that I became a voter. And I hope all of these guys get in, because I had to take off Grand Wizard, who I had on last year, because of Ventura.
Sure.
Like, there's a lot of good people in this group, and I hope we start getting some people in, because it's getting a little crowded.
Yeah, we need to... I hope we get some people elected off of... I feel like that and the historical wrestler region are both tremendously jam-packed right now. I hope there's some vote, you know, people get voted in off of there trying to clear this up.
I agree.
Well, and I guess that's it. I did ask that Jun Kasai be put on the ballot for next year. I think he has a very intriguing case as maybe the best hardcore wrestler of all time. For such a long time, too, for a style that's supposedly so destructive to your body. And I, you know, the Dragon Gate guys want to put Stalker Ichikawa on there. I'll help. I suggested him, too, as the greatest comedy wrestler of all time. So, yeah, that's it. That's my ballot.
I'm excited to see who gets in a month and a half when Dave finally releases it.
I have a feeling it'll be fast because there's so much stuff coming up. Like, December is going to be massive for him because he's got the lead up to the Tanahashi retirement match. He's got the Cena retirement match. You got World's End at the end of the month. I think that I think Dave will have to do a pretty quick turnaround on it. And hopefully it's like a week or two, because I'm excited to see the results.
I agree. That, Fred, is another episode of The Good, The Bad, and The Hungy.
The greatest podcast to ever be.
100%. Thank you guys so much for listening. Be sure to like, subscribe, and join us in the Voice of Wrestling Discord, where we will continue to have some Hall of Fame conversation, and you can view our ballots in totality to that just for ease of that, instead of just hearing it on audio form, and come chat with us. Leave us a 5-star review, and we will be back shortly, probably to talk about the blood and guts that we have. I believe it's next week, right?
Oh, I completely forgot about that. Yeah. No juice. I don't think it has any juice, frankly.
No.
But no, that's kind of the problem with AEW right now, ain't it?
It's a big problem with AEW right now, but we got the juice. I'm Tyler. He's Fred. Thanks for listening, everybody. We'll see you later.
Hi, I'm Andrew Rich. And if you're like me, you look at the state of modern wrestling discourse and think, wow, what a cesspool. That's why I'm here to tell you about Music of the Mat Remix. That's right, your favorite wrestling music podcast is back with a new format, where I bring on a guest and we play songs related to wrestling-themed topics. It could be a wrestling reference, a wrestling concept, a wrestling pun, things of that nature. Now you might be saying, Andrew, that is a very, very tenuous connection to pro wrestling on a wrestling podcast network. Is this just an excuse to hang out with your friends and talk about music and ignore the rest of the wrestling landscape? Yes. Yes, it is. So listen to Music of the Mat Remix on the Voices of Wrestling Podcast Network, available on Apple, Spotify, or your podcast player of choice.
Hello, Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network listeners. I am Jeff Hawkins, co-host of Shake Them Ropes, with a very special announcement. If it's been a while or you've never listened to us before, the original gang is back, myself and Rob McCarron, back talking wrestling. We have no idea where this show's going to go, where we're going to keep any of the old bits or any of the old things in there. It's going to be a process. It's going to be a journey, and we'd like for you to come along with us. Only on Shake Them Ropes on the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network.